it soft. Unlike the window breaks.
This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson.
Hello, old sport.
Leonardo DiCaprio is one of the few actors working today who can get pretty much any movie made. So, what roles is he looking for? Mostly liars, criminals, sociopaths, tortured souls. In his latest film, The Wolf of Wall Street, a combination of all of those. Jordan Belfort was a stockbroker in the late 80s and early 90s whose ripoffs and financial crimes were matched by his personal living large depravity. And this isn't just another role for DiCaprio. He played a big part in getting The Wolf of Wall Street made, even convincing Martin Scorsese to direct the film. His performance as the atrocious Jordan Belfort is being called the best of his career, and he was up for a Golden Globe at this week's awards. Leonardo DiCaprio, welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So first off, congratulations on the Golden Globes and the new all-time record for F-bombs in a motion picture.
Yes, I heard. We broke the record.
Not bad for a movie about finance. 506.
Yeah, not with the term Wall Street in the title, it's pretty dubious achievement.
Now, when people say, as they have said, this is the best performance he's ever given, are you inclined to agree?
Look, I'm incredibly proud of the performance. We had a much different approach going into this project than many of the other ones we had. I remember watching The King of Comedy early on and seeing this sort of organized chaos that Marty created with the actors, wherein they improvised even before the film started, and then they sort of re-improvised the improvised material. So it was really a free-form kind of film that you don't really get to see made in coming from the Hollywood studio system, which is one of the reasons why I've wanted to do it for such a long period of time. It was a six-year process to get the film made.
You mentioned King of Comedy. One forgets that Martin Scorsese has made a comedy, a weird, dark comedy, but nevertheless like this, a comedy.
Not to mention he originally considered Goodfellas a comedy as well.
Well, that's just him.
Yeah.
I want to play a clip from Wolf of Wall Street in which you and some of your fellow executives are justifying exorbitant expenses to your father, played by Rob Reiner, who works with you at the brokerage.
Jordy, look what you got here.
What?
Look at this. $26,000 for one dinner.
No. This could be explained. Dad, we had client. We had the Pfizer clients.
Right. The porterhouse from Argentina.
The expensive champagne and the wine. We had to buy champagne. And you ordered all the sides. Tell them about the sides you ordered.
I ordered the sides.
Sides?
Yeah.
Sides? $26,000 worth of sides? What are these sides? They cure cancer?
The sides did cure cancer. That's the problem. That's why they were expensive.
Shut up.
I'm serious. I know.
Stop.
So given that you guys were constantly improvising scenes of these crazy bros eating and drinking and snorting and having sex, leaving no temptation unindulged, at the end of the workday, was it hard to go back to normality?
I suppose, you know, we all took on a different attitude while making this movie. By no means did we go home and, you know, have orgies.
Oh, darn.
But, you know, it was an incredibly freeing set. Everybody gave into every carnal indulgence on set, and we looked at this like, the Roman Empire. We looked at it, you know, short of virgin maidens feeding us grapes, we put everything we possibly could into this movie.
And that didn't work out too well for the Romans.
No, it didn't. Exactly.
So there are those crazy, improvised, over-the-top, drugged-out scenes. Then there are several times these serious, heartfelt monologues you give to your staff, these people who really believe in you, whom you've assembled to work in your shady brokerage. That's not like anything I've ever seen you do.
Those speeches, which to me were like Braveheart war cries for greed in a lot of ways, were things that I was thinking about for 6-7 years. Those are some of the most well-written speeches I'd ever come across. So I'd done tons of research on motivational speaking. I spoke to Jordan. I read up on exactly the way some of these guys communicate in Wall Street.
Uh-huh.
And it was interesting because I'd been thinking about them so much the day before I was supposed to do them. My throat seized up with strep throat and I couldn't say any of them.
Huh.
It was almost like I had this actor's block, which was great because it gave me another month to sort of think about them and do even more research. So on the day, it became this entirely different animal.
You started trying to get this movie made before the meltdown and the recession. When the recession happened and the meltdown happened, did you go, oh, now I can get this made?
Not necessarily. I think it's always a tough subject matter. I think that, you know, look, this is a hard R. There's lots of drugs, sex, profanity in the film. But to me, you know, when I went into this world, not knowing much about the world of finance and Wall Street, I thought, okay, these are the people that are responsible for the economic meltdown. And then I realized, no, wait a minute. These guys are outsiders trying to emulate Gordon Gekko.
Right.
These are the guys that are in Long Island that are trying to be the fat cats on Wall Street that were simultaneously robbing destroying our economy. So it represented something more in our very culture, this attitude of gaining wealth at any cost and feeding into every sort of carnal desire you possibly can. And we very purposefully, I think, in this film, made a decision, which is why there's probably been some controversy. We didn't want to show the wake of their destruction. And I think that, you know, we did that very consciously because, you know, in a film, you wanted to be transported into somebody else's mindset. That's what's so powerful about cinema as an art form. And we wanted people to get closer to the understanding of, you know, where these people are and ultimately what motivates them and how it can be such an elusive, enticing world to be in.
I think you've hit on the interesting point of why there is this ongoing, emphatic, emotional debate about, oh, do they glorify these people or not? Since I ended up feeling literally nauseous by seeing the amount of drugs that these characters ingest. But as you say, because you don't show their destruction, I guess that's what made people say, hey, they're not showing that these guys are really bad, and because it's a comedy as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, you know, Marty ultimately said, look, this is incredibly funny, but what we're talking about is not funny. And I'm not going to make a traditional movie that, you know, has a didactic ending where we explain to the audience exactly the way they should feel and digest what they've just seen. I want to throw them, you know, headfirst into this world unapologetically and not judge these people because ultimately they represent something about the world we live in and the darker nature of all of us. And to me, that's a timeless, interesting approach to making a film. And he said to me very early on, he said, look, I've done many films about disreputable characters. You know, he's sort of the master of it in a lot of ways. And he said, as long as you don't apologize for their actions and portray them as authentically as you possibly can, people will go along on that journey. And I think Marty's films always have been about the pursuit of the American dream in a lot of ways, the corruption of that dream and the hustle that it takes to get there.
Speaking about playing bad, greedy man, I want to play a clip from Django Unchained in which your character, a guy named Calvin Candy, is negotiating the sale of one of his slaves.
And if y'all want to leave Candyland with Broomhilda, the price is $12,000.
And I take it you prefer the take-it-or-leave-it style of negotiation?
Yes, I do, Doctor. You see, under the laws of Chickasaw County, Broomhilda here is my property. And I can choose to do with my property whatever I so desire.
Between Django and Wolf of Wall Street and The Great Gatsby, which you film back-to-back, you have really become a specialist in monstrous rich guys. And I wonder how come.
It's an interesting question. You know, with The Great Gatsby and Django and this film, in a lot of ways it was like a trilogy of corruption in America through different time periods. I mean, I suppose it probably stems from, you know, having a poor upbringing in Los Angeles and being accepted into, you know, the University of Elementary School, which was a school where, you know, they tried to integrate a lot of different kids together. And I got to go see how the other half lived, you know. And I think since then...
You mean the richer half?
Yeah. It's been a fascination with that world and a fascination with, you know, how they got there. And you know, stories of corruption in America, to me, I mean, they're a fascinating thing to explore. I mean, I look at the world around us sometimes, and it's bizarre. It's surreal to me how the almighty dollar is so incredibly powerful and destructive at the same time.
Well, so, and you, as you say, you grow up without a lot of money, although your father was a great underground comic artist whose work I read as a kid myself. But now you are living how the other half lives, not doing coke and corruption, I assume, all the time. Do you have a different view of it, or have you taken that kind of 12-year-old view into the posh Hollywood world that you inhabit now?
Absolutely. You know, I don't – I think it's actually – you know, I think it's a moral responsibility to give back. Truly, I really do. I think that, you know, to me, I'm almost living in a surreal fantasy world myself. I've gotten at a young age to decide what I wanted to do as a profession, and luckily enough, I've gotten to be successful at it. So, to me, it's you know, without giving back and without trying to. Do something either positive for your community or the world around you, all of it really means nothing.
You don't do this thing, it seems, that other movie stars do, which is, oh, I'll make one big, you know, surefire blockbuster thing where I put on tights and play a superhero, and then I'll do the good movie, and then I'll do the other payday movie, and then I'll do a good movie. You do, it seems, only movies that are kind of difficult and complicated and dark and ambitious.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. Thank you. But the truth is that when I got my first role in This Boy's Life, I was 15 years old, and I came from the world of television, and I finally realized, okay, I'm working with somebody that's of A-plus caliber and Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
And it led me to really watching movies for a year straight, every single day, as many movies as I possibly could. And I think at that age you get so unbelievably overwhelmed with what's been done before you. That for me, I just felt this strange responsibility to attempt to emulate to do something that good in my lifetime. And then
right.
That becomes something that I think is, you're never satisfied. No matter what you achieve, you always try to achieve more. And to tell you the truth, doing a lot of these movies are incredibly long endeavors, and they take a lot of your energy and a lot of your thought, and they consume a lot of your life. And you know, my attitude has been pretty much the same ever since I've been 15, and it hasn't really changed, which is, look, if you're going to invest your time in something, you know, try to swing for the fences at least.
Right.
You're never always going to hit a home run. You may hit a single sometimes, but, you know, if you're given that opportunity, I've always looked at it as somewhat of a responsibility to try to make the best of it.
Are you moving on perhaps to a brighter side of the street in your next project or two?
Maybe not.
No, you're going to stick with the greed and corruption failed American
dream?
I don't
know if it's greed and corruption. That's certainly not the case. But, I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. To me, the films that have impacted me the most in my life, everything from the Bicycle Thief to East of Eden to 2001 to Taxi Driver, are films with characters at the lead that are somewhat tortured. And that's just the way it is. And that's kind of what I like. And that's what affected me as a 15-year-old kid. That's what moved me and made me want to do movies. So we'll see.
Well, I look forward to the next one. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much. That was a great conversation. I appreciate it.
You know I'm the wolf, baby. You know I stay in the woods.
Leonardo DiCaprio stars in The Wolf of Wall Street, which you can see anywhere if you're over age 18 or accompanied by an adult who is sure to regret having brought you. Leo's up for a Golden Globe for his performance. And if you're into that sort of thing, check out our awards night bingo at studio360.org this week. It makes watching a whole lot more fun.